Jai Chananda, Jai Jai Mahaprabhu, Sarva Bhakta Vrinda. All glories to Sri Advaita Prabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Nityananda Prabhu is the topmost branch of the indestructible tree of eternal love of Godhead. Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I offer my respectful obeisance to all the sub-branches of that topmost branch. Sri Nityananda Vikshishkanda Guru Tara Tata Janmina Shakka Prashaka Vishtare. Sri Nityananda Prabhu is an extremely heavy branch of the Sri Chaitanya tree. From that branch grow many branches and sub branches. Mallakira Icche Jale Badishaka Gan Prema Fule Falabari Chaila Bhuvan. Wanted by the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these branches and sub-branches have grown unlimitedly and cover the entire world with fruits and flowers. Asankhyananta ganake karuganana apana sudite kahi mukhya mukhya jana. These branches and sub-branches of devotees are innumerable and unlimited. Who could count them? For my personal purification, I shall try to enumerate only the most prominent among them. Purport. One should not write books or essays on transcendental subject matter for material name, fame or profit. Transcendental literature must be written under the direction of a superior authority because it's not meant for material purposes. If one tries to write under superior authority, he becomes purified. All Krishna conscious activities should be undertaken for personal purification. Apana Surite, not for material gain. It's very difficult to put this into practice. Because when one turns to superior authority, one must be willing to take direction. And who wants that? We don't mind taking blessings. Please bless me. Please give us some mercy. But who will actually take the greatest mercy, which is to become completely pliable, to become completely an instrument in the hands of a superior? That is very, very rare. It is very difficult. Nimitta mantra, bhavasavi sitsi. We want to somehow or other maintain the maximum independence that we can. So when we say, I herewith surrender my life, we mean to say the minimum that I have to. And please, I'm of goodwill, so don't be too heavy with me. That is more or less our true mood in surrender. It is very, very difficult. And if a spiritual authority doesn't give us any room, then we feel, well, he's not qualified actually to be a spiritual authority because he doesn't really understand, he's insensitive. But who is insensitive, really, if you really look at it? The follower is insensitive. He is like not, because that's how it is. The follower must be completely sensitive to the master, 100%. And we see in Srila Prabhupada how he is not only fulfilling the order of his spiritual master in a literal sense, you should preach in the English language, but rather he's expanding that to the max, that order. He takes the essence of it. He takes the very spirit of it. And everyone gets the mercy. Yes. So, Srila Prabhupada, in that way, is so clearly, so visibly to all of us, the person who did it. Without him, it would seem completely theoretical. But seeing in Prabhupada's example that mood. Therefore, Prabhupada said many times that before being master, one must be disciple. That is the principle, and that is quite difficult. What does the spiritual master want? It is no secret at all. The spiritual master has only one interest, to somehow or other deliver the conditioned souls in this material world. He has no other interest. Why else would he be in this world? There's no reason to be in the material world. Why be here? Better leave now, back to Godhead right away. Why would one who is liberated, why would he stay? Go now. What for? Stay here in this pandemonium, Prabhupada calls it. But to deliver conditioned souls. Therefore, this is what we somehow or other must make our mission. Our energy must go for that purpose. Our energy is for delivering conditioned souls. Either directly or indirectly. Either by doing it, either by being supported. But how to deliver? In Varna Ashram, we see Mukha Bahura Pala Ja. We see that the brahmachari is the legs, running everywhere, here and there, with so much energy, but struggling also with commitment, struggling with purity, internally, maybe externally. Then we are looking at the grihastha. It's meant to be a situation of maturity. It's meant to be an ashram of responsibility. It is meant to be an ashram where one is very much ready to make sacrifice. Because in the grihastha ashram, one must give for the welfare of others. It is the ashram of charity. It is the ashram of supporting all other endeavors. The grihastha takes the difficulty. He takes the difficult part because the grihastha deals intimately with the material energy. And that is just troublesome. Just outright troublesome. The material energy is trouble. Right? Most of the time. There is some of it that is not so troublesome. Some of it is quite okay for a while. So those are the perks. But a lot of austerity. But the grihastha also cannot just spend his time with his own comfortable life. That is not first class. First class is if we become part of this greater mission. So this is what we desire. Sacrifice, somehow or other. directly, indirectly,
doesn't matter.
Directly preach one-on-one or to many, or indirectly support. But that is the desire of the spiritual master. Some spiritual masters may be tactful about it and not say it in a very strong way. Others may just say it directly and just straight in the face. But obviously, that is the desire of the spiritual master. How can I please you? What do you need? Is there anything you need? Of course, I need the mercy to go out. Yeah, that's what I need. But anything you need personally for yourself? Yes, I need the mercy to go out. Would you like some juice? Yes, I want lots of juice. Bring me many eager people who want to hear about Krishna. That's the kind of juice. That's juice. That's my favorite juice. What's your favorite? Lychee or, what kind of juice would you like? You know, breakfast, punch. No, what I would really like is actually that juice of seeing people taking to Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other, I don't cry when I hear about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, because my heart is made of steel. What can I say? But I do cry when I see that people who are suffering, who are struggling so much, are getting Krishna consciousness. Just today, there was a group of workers on the stations. Maybe they came from the construction site, I'm not sure. They were in blue overalls. There were still others working, but they were on the platform. And they were chanting Hare Krishna, and not just a little bit, like anything. You know, like anything, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then, even Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. And even to the point where they knew the whole mantra, and they kept on doing it. Not all the time, but every once in a while. One would call out, and then another one. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then while the train came, they went on the train. The train drove off, and I still heard Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna as the train drove away. I mean, what a blessing this rollerball station. That's amazing. 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 That it's just spilling over, just over the wall. I did a little dance in front of the window. What to do? We can just see. That's very nice. Because, this Kali Yuga, it's like, what shall we say about it? I don't know if in the house where you grew up it was Kali Yuga, but in the house where I grew up it was. It was. Kali Yuga was there completely. Maybe not in its, not always in its most gross form, but it was based on suffering. I cannot say that everything was manifest in its gross form, but there was dishonesty, there was facade, there was falsity, there was exploitation, there was heartlessness, there was coldness, right, where love should have been. When people got a death notice, there were some, from the doctor, there were some who tried to get them declared insane so that they couldn't spend any money before they died. To name something, things that give a bad taste. So there was enough of that to say, yes, Kali Yuga. So So I cannot speak for anyone else, although when I look, I seem to detect some some influence, right? some remainders of that suffering. We had to discover ways to cover up the suffering, to avoid it, to block it out, to block ourselves, various ways. But all it creates is more suffering. The big social divide, right? One group against another group and all that. Kali Yuga. So the suffering is certainly there. Janani was reminded me today of Jayadvaita Maharaj, who was in New York. And was asked, he was walking around like that, like a monk. So one policeman asked him, "So, what is it that you guys have to give up to become like that?" Well, there's many things you could say. You could say, you know, you have to give up. You know what you have to give up. But you know what he said? He said, "Suffering." And the New York cop could understand, because as a cop you see a lot of it. Yeah. I mean, the cop is usually called when the suffering is going on, or when it's too late. The corpse is there, Okay, well, it got out of hand. So a cop knows all about it when you say it. So the cop said, "What do you have to give up? Suffering." That makes sense. That's what he said. Yes, so we want to take shelter. Nityananda has made arrangements, many arrangements, invisible to us, right? But many arrangements to bring Krishna consciousness to us. It is for that reason that it is here. It is for that reason that somehow or other people work here on a building site next door. They think they're there to make money, but that's not a fact. They have come there because somehow or other the abhyata sukriti, the unknown spiritual benefit, has now accrued to a point where they can come so close that they can directly hear it. Like that. And in our case, it even gone further. And some of us even got initiated. How that ever happened? Like us, you know what I mean? And then, you know, after a while, when we were still not qualified, then they gave us a second initiation as well. And some of us, they even gave a tanda, you know, they were walking around with this big thing, like, whoa, you know. But really, looking at it, it's just mercy on all sides. Just looking at that construction site from my window now, I'm seeing it going up, that building. It's a monster. It blocks the sun. And the view. Anyway, too late now, I guess. Construction is such that there are many artificial supports in the earlier stages. There's all kinds of metal supports that hold up concrete, and later columns are cast to take their place. So spiritual life, it is the same with us. Our whole spiritual life, like our basic activity, is just standing on temporary support of Nityananda, who is coming in and holding it up. And we have to gradually, with service, fill it in until we have enough depth and enough strength to maintain ourselves spiritually. Because actually, our weakness is great, very great. That is the situation. The mind is still very sinful, and the senses are restless and demanding forbidden activity. It is material security. Either desires for enjoyment or desires born out of fear, just fear. It said one who is Shakespeare, who said many things, he said that one who is courageous dies only once, whereas a coward dies over and over, again and again. He goes through death many times in his mind. Okay. Interesting. So many of us may be living in fear. A wall, a higher wall, more voltage, another gate, and another one, and another alarm, and so on, and still not safe. We'll never be safe, no matter how many walls, maybe a dog, but then some say they burn the tail of a monkey if the dog goes to sleep. Have you heard? Now you know. Yes, so many things up there. So what can be said? The fear. Somehow or other we have these two driving forces. The force, the desire to enjoy, and fear. Vayam vitya vinivesitasyat. As soon as you're separated from Krishna, there is fear, anxiety. That is the nature of material existence. So anyone in the material world is always afraid. But Nityananda makes it very easy for us. In spite of our shortcomings and so on, there is mercy. And that mercy is very powerful, extremely powerful. So much so as that it gives us hope. Because we know that even when you're not perfectly pure, that still you might just go back to Godhead by mercy, on the strength of mercy. So somehow or other stay connected. Somehow or other do something. Something to attract that mercy. Mercy is causeless. It comes to us without a reason. But yet, we can attract it. One can attract mercy. Mercy by service attitude. By eagerness. By really doing something. Everybody is like that. We also, you know, like if you're giving out some plates of prasada, you know, you're handing it out and everyone comes and they queue up, but you see this tiny little kid, you know, very small, so eager. You take that one out of the line, you know, okay, you take the other.
In the line, stay in the line. In the line, if you're not in the line, you're not getting anything. Get back in that line. Stay in, no, in the line.
Then that little kid.
In the line, I tell you.
Yeah. I'm watching you. You came twice. That's what they do, you know. They keep the line never ends. They keep on going back in the line. Change their shirt. The professionals, you know. Somehow or other. But that's okay. One should go in the line twice and go for the mercy. That eagerness must be there. All right, you came twice. You'll get twice also. That is how it is, yes. So by our service attitude, by our eagerness, we can attract mercy. And that is our saving grace. Because if it all depends on qualities, if we will be judged, if we would be judged by our thoughts, oh my God. Imagine, at the end of life, they'll judge us by what we think. Oh no, not what we think. I mean, even if you will be judged by what you said, it already starts sweating, right? What to speak, okay, and what you did, you know, that's already difficult. But what we think. So at least in Srimad Bhagavatam it is said that at the time when Maharaj Pariksit met Kali, and Kali came into the kingdom, there is a passage where it is described that in this age of Kali there is no reaction for thoughts, for sinful thought. So you can think whatever, no reaction, no karma. And it's saying, but if you think of pious things, then you get the benefit. So just in your mind, you just think like flower to the deities. You get the benefit. It's pretty good, you know. Even in the morning, when you sort of think in bed, open one eye and think, Mangalarti. And then you close it again. At least you thought of Mangalarti. You get some benefit. See, believe it or not, there is a benefit. It is. It is. So like that, it's very auspicious. Whatever. So think of a lot of good things. Right? Thank you so much for being here. Then we can get so much benefit. So, in that way, it is made extremely easy for us. Very, very easy. And then, we are not just judged on the sum total. It is not looked. Is there any impurity? Sorry, not qualified. Because for the spiritual world, one has to be 100% pure. It is a fact. One has to be 100% pure to enter into the spiritual world. But we need not worry. Srila Prabhupada, Lord Nityananda, and the entire Panchatattva, and all the acharyas coming down in the cyclic succession, they all of them, all these branches of the Chaitanya tree, and even those great personalities who appeared before, all of them have prayed to deliver us. All of them. Nityananda, he was the one who predicted that in every town and village this holy name would be chanted. That was his plan, that was his desire. Prabhupada took that. There is a letter to Jayapataka Maharaj where Prabhupada writes, he says that Nityananda made this prediction that in every town and village the holy name will be heard, so okay, then, and let's do it. Yeah. So, Prabhupada made it true. He said, okay, there's a prediction, then I must make it through. What a wonderful approach. You know, someone might think, wow, there's the prediction of Nityananda that in every town and village the holy name will be heard. Well, I'll go back to bed, but wake me up when it's happening, you know? And it's a miracle. Nityananda is going to do it. I wonder when, you know. One of these days, right? It's going to happen. But Prabhupada had a different mood. Prabhupada said, oh, Nityananda said it will happen. Let me make it happen. Let me make it happen. Surely. And then knowing that this activity is blessed. And Prabhupada took it. And see how far he took it. And now people on the train, right, that we don't know who they are, they're chanting. And they take it home in their village. So, okay, those villages are okay. But possibly there are some villages where we haven't been yet. Like our Harinam gang can just drive up and down in the train. You know, they're always running all over the place. They go on the train downtown to the Harinam. But actually, people sing on the train. And everybody knows it here in this temple. You just need to teach them the song. And there's a story about a Bengali bus, right? And this story on the Bengali bus is that early in the morning, the Bengali bus was packed, you know. And then it started. One person started to accuse someone else. And before you knew it,
You cannot talk to him because he is from my village. You are talking to him, he is from my village.
And before you know it, the whole bus got into a huge argument. It is said that after some time, the original people that started fighting, they got off the bus. Right? But the fight stayed on the bus the whole day. That's what actually happened. Yeah? The fight stayed on the bus. So, this is what we want. Right? We want the kirtan to just stay on the train. So that every day when the trains pull into the station, they greet us with kirtan. That's good for us. That might, you know, if you miss Mongolari, then at least you wake up with kirtan. Okay. At least I would. So, yeah. Different initiatives can be taken, whatever it is. But we should know that because there is the mercy of all these acharyas who have prayed for our deliverance in this age of Kali, therefore it's not expected that we become so completely faultless. All that is expected from us is some faithfulness. That we are faithful in the basics. Prabhupada said four regulative principles. Prabhupada didn't say, you know, that if you study the Vedic scriptures, there are eight types of illicit sex, right? And these eight types of illicit sex are, let me just try to remember. It starts with, I think, with sadhanam, kirtanam, keli, peksanam. To hear about it, to speak about it, to playfully joke about it, or, you know, subtle games, or to look. Then you get to make, then you have kuyam, asanam, to sit in a private environment with a member of the opposite sex. Yeah. And then something, there's one that I can't remember now. And finally to engage in illicit sex. So you can see there are different levels of illicit sex described. Now, when we promise in the four regulative principles not to engage in illicit sex, well, sometimes the mind may remember illicit sex. What can be done? And wasn't it that thoughts were free, and now maybe they're not? No. When we are saying, when we make the vow, no illicit sex, we promise not to engage in the illicit activity. But we also know that these other things, right, will lead to that illicit activity. It is the seed. The seed doesn't show any plant, doesn't show any fruits, but from the seed, the seed leads to the fruit. Yeah. So although thoughts are free, and there is no reaction, no karmic reaction at all, right, for any sinful thought, the sinful thought, though, is the seed for more. That is the problem with it. When we dwell on a sinful thought, it will lead to something. Let's say we think, you know, if I think, this guy is a banana. Okay. I can think it 100 times, you know, every time I see him, there goes that banana again, right? One of these days,
it's going to slip out of my mouth. You know, I'm going to, if I think it 100 times, I'm going to say it one day. One day I'm just going to say, God, you know, you're such a banana. Yeah, for sure, I'm going to say it. Yeah. That's what it is. Can you imagine I could think he's something else and I might say that too? Yeah, that would be worse. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the issue, that we must be conscious of, that although there are no karmic reactions for what we think, it leads on to actions that do give reactions. It leads on to offenses, it leads on to sinful activity. Therefore, one must purify the mind, very important. So there are two ways we can deal with the impure mind. One is we can try to, as soon as we think of something sinful, to stop right there. You know, no meditation on it, like no daydreaming about. Immediately cutting, that's one thing. And the other thing is to fill the mind with positive information. So we check the negative by cutting negative thoughts and then put positive information in the consciousness so that it will, that works. And if you, I mean, like these classes, you know, like you go home and something is there, something sticks, whatever. Something still comes back in the thought. So it's a way of keeping the consciousness pure. So that we have to do. And in the end of the day, whatever we fall short, we know that the mercy is there. And yes, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, more merciful, Lord Nityananda, more merciful, the devotee of Nityananda. Therefore, returning to Prabhupada, knowing that his prayer is the ultimate prayer. I have this little example, and I'll end with that because time has moved. Now, there's a mountain, and it's sitting in the... This is the mountain of the Vedic knowledge. All the Vedic instructions and injunctions, like a mountain. This mountain is sitting in the ocean of mercy. And the waves of this ocean of mercy are washing on the beach at the base of that mountain. The waves of Lord Chaitanya are washing far onto the beach and leave a watermark. But then comes the wave of Nityananda and leaves a watermark still further than the one of Lord Chaitanya. And in the end, the Prabhupada wave comes up the Vedic mountain, right, further than any other mercy. So, the Vedic literature is very refined. It governs every aspect of life. In the morning, one cannot relieve himself in the house. A bathroom in the house is not... Then the whole house would be contaminated. How can you possibly think that there's a room in the house you can go inside and pass stool in that room? After that, the whole house is finished, impure. You have to move out. You can no longer live. It's become a toilet, basically. So it's like if you've passed in one room, then the whole house is finished, you know. So this idea of attached bath doesn't exist in Vedic culture. It's either in the forest and, okay. So traditionally, you go somewhere in the forest. Then one has to face a certain direction. You cannot face the wrong direction as one relieves himself. And the complications, right? it would be too much. Then after the whole thing is over, okay, a full bath, and the hands, one has to wash them 12 times with clay. 12 times with clay. Try it. One time, put the clay, wash it off, only 11 times more. Perfectly. If 12 times, it would drive us nuts, really. So it's very, very complicated. Everything is prescribed. We don't have that kind of a mind. We're too rebellious. Yeah, forget it.
Too complicated, too fanatic. Come on, I mean, be real, man. I'm not going outside. It's raining, man. That's serious. I've lived in one such house, and in the rainy season, under an umbrella, looking at snakes. Lots of snakes. Lots of snakes. Yeah. Not easy. So Vedic culture was not exactly so easy.
So just the examples are very practical examples to bring it down to, from the romantic platform to the earthly platform.
And that's why I came with these stool examples, because they make it very earthly. Very real.
Yeah. So anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is we fall short, surely. We are ignorant. Even if we would try, we'll never learn. We'll never learn to do it right. And we're not even trying.
And then what we know that we should follow, we don't even follow that. Who never, while eating, takes something with the left hand? Yeah. Who's never done that? It's like, now it's contaminated. Right? That bowl has to be thrown. Wash it with cow dung. Forget it, It has to be discarded. Yeah. Give it up. If you get serious and strict, there is no end to the rules that we break and that we fail to follow. Therefore, we depend on mercy, very much so.
So, the mercy of Srila Prabhupada is ultimately the most powerful factor that will deliver us in our spiritual life. We who come after Prabhupada are the spiritual masters after Prabhupada. They bring everyone to Prabhupada. That's what it means, founder or charya. But they are, in that way, bringing everyone to Prabhupada. But their mercy is also there. Very important. So, that's the key. And that's how we can go back to Godhead this lifetime. Okay.
Now I want to ask for a comment of Madhava Prabhu.
When I went to Mayapur in 1975, I was staying in the only building that was there was the Lotus. And I was sharing a room with Prajulika Prabhu, Prabhupada's Sanskrit. And somehow there was a question, because he used to sleep on his bed, and he had mounds and mounds of books on the bed. And I was, somehow the point of view came about, what are all the rules and regulations? And he mentioned that if we followed all the rules and regulations, we wouldn't even get out of the bathroom till after midday. And he mentioned that Prabhupada wasn't into Prabhupada was into preaching. So not that we're neglecting them, but the point is the most important. And I also remember Yoganilka Prabhu came back from India, and he instituted this practice that you must use clay and wash your hands six times one side, six times the other side. That's about a week. That was brilliant. Nobody really bothered to put up with that.
rather pleasant. Thank you. Yeah, we were just in New York a few weeks ago in the Bhakti Center, which is very close to National Spirit Storefront. And Pradyumna was there. He stays there. Oh. And he has like stacks of books.
All around. I will.
It's still the same. Very sweet, but very learned. I woke him up one morning. I was waiting for him to wake up because every day he escaped and I couldn't catch him. So I just cornered him. As soon as he got up from bed, he was still in his night gear. But it didn't matter. I asked him a question immediately. He forgot where he was and went straight to the scriptures, quoting all kinds of stuff. And it's extremely learned. Incredible. Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, Prabhupada said that actually he did the translation of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said. He said, I only wrote the purports. Then you're talking about the clay. Yeah, we had one sannyasi who was for a while doing that with the clay. And all the drains got clogged up. All the pipes were full of mud. So these things are complicated.
I presume that we would give class maybe once a week. And he didn't attend much of the program, really. But when he gave a class, everybody was just thunderstruck. You know, yeah. So much information.
Yeah, when he opens his mouth, it's like... I once, I had Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhanekta devotion. I had read the commentary of Jiva Goswami. So I started to think getting scholarly now, the commentary. So I'm talking to him, what he thought about the translation, right? He says, the translation of the commentary is not bad. He said, but you can't really understand the commentary of Jiva Goswami if you haven't read the commentary of such and such. And then there's a commentary on his commentary and another commentary on that commentary. Actually, it goes five layers deep. And then he starts, and it says in the first one, it says this, and the second one that, but the fifth one is arguing against it, and this guy goes, okay, I know nothing. Just a village pumpkin. It's something else. Yeah, he's quite a scholar. And very humble. Of course. He told you, why you have to get up so early?
get up late.
He was sleeping on the floor right next to him and he had put his alarm clock very early. You wake me up every day. Otherwise, it was very sweet.
Maharaj, you spoke of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But is there a case where we may be practicing, but at the same time we kind of so caught up in the material world that we don't see ourselves, that we don't really want to receive that mercy, and we're just kind of hanging around practicing but not really wanting to get it, and will we still get it if it's like that?
All of us are like that. We all don't really... We're all not sincere. We're all not serious. And maybe we will miss... Maybe we'll have to go to the heavenly planets first. Maybe. But I keep on hoping that they'll get the mercy of Nichiren somehow. And for that, I'm hoping.
So that if we don't try and do something.
If we don't have that hope, if we're just hanging around, probably we won't get, even if we chant.
Well, we may still get.
Okay.
Very much. Even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the vows of initiation are strict, and if one takes them and one doesn't follow afterwards, the reactions that one gets for these same activities are stronger than an ordinary person would get. So, but even if one is not following everything, generally still these vows will be successful. He said, I'm not here advertising, okay, don't worry about it, but he said that even if you don't follow everything, still generally will be successful. That's how powerful they are, he mentions.
As one long desires it.
Are we finished?